Good morning. I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at 8:03 a.m. on Thursday, March 13th. Joining me today, we have Representative Sadler, Representative Tallarico, Representative Zulkowski, Co-Chair Zulkowski, myself, Co-Chair Parrish, and Representative Drummond. Our staff today are Max Stanley, Patrick Courtnage, and Lori Rowland. We do have a quorum to conduct business. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone present to silence their cell phones and other electronic devices. We have one item today on the agenda, Senate Bill 174, Programs for Persons with Disabilities. It is the first hearing on the resolution, on the bill. Would the bill sponsor, Senator Michicki, and his staffer, Caitlin Stansbury, come to the testifier's table, please. Introduce yourself, place your name and any affiliation on the record, and begin your testimony. We've been joined by Representative Rauscher.
Good morning, Co-Chair Parrish. Thank you for having us this morning. My name is Senator Peter Michicki from District O on the Kenai Peninsula.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Caitlin Stansbury. I'm interning in Senator Michicki's office.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. So I'll begin with a quote, and this is from Claire's mom, who was during public testimony on the bill in Senate Health and Social Services. And the quote is, "Everyone with kids are one catastrophe away from needing services, one injury, one car wreck." So if you think this bill is just for someone else, there are people that have suddenly found themselves in need of Department of Health and Social Services services after a life-changing experience that can come on quite suddenly. This bill allows the Department of Health and Social Services to partner more closely with persons with physical and mental disabilities to enable active participation in their support service. It's a shared vision of over 200 people and organizations, including the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Ed and the Key Coalition of Alaska. It was their first priority, on their priority list this year. Person-centered services enhance individuals with physical and mental disabilities lives by giving them more control over their support services, as well as enables their full participation in social and economic environment of their communities. The state benefits from cost reduction through providing services that meet the needs of the persons with physical and mental disabilities instead of providing standard service bundles. SB 174 would enable the support service programs to consider the paid and unpaid support of these individuals. Unpaid support in community is the natural support that stems from the home and community, such as work, volunteering, social participation, etc. SB 174 provides a long overdue unifying vision to allocate and apply resources in a manner that maximizes Alaskans experiencing disabilities contributions to their communities. The other programs that have followed this vision are the ABLE accounts and Employment First. I just want you to please remember that individuals with physical and mental disabilities are not cattle. They're not a number. They're amazing individual Alaskans with the same hopes, dreams, and plans as the rest of us. Senate Bill 174 recognizes that, and I encourage your support.
Thank you.
Chairman Parrish, members of the committee, I am Caitlin Stansbury. I am currently interning in Senator Michicki's office. Senate Bill 174. Programs for Persons with Disabilities. As was said before, Senate Bill 174 is the product of input from over 200 people in such organizations as the Alaska Mental Health Trust, the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, the Key Coalition of Alaska, and other members of the community. So why establish this avenue of participation? All persons deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Persons with physical and mental disabilities participating in the programs they use enhance their quality of life and treatment. Alaskans with physical and mental disabilities are encouraged by fully engaging in their lifestyles and thrive when participating in the social and economic environment of their homes, communities, and Alaska. Senate Bill 174 would enable the Department of Health and Social Services to take a more flexible approach in the application of programs allowing Alaskans with physical and mental disabilities to actively participate in the systems of their care. These systems of care are the programs they use daily. Senate Bill 174 provides a long overdue unifying vision to assure that available resources are allocated and applied in such a manner to maximize the contributions of Alaskans experiencing disabilities within their communities. Senator Michiki urges the support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee for the bill's sponsor or his staff? Representative Sadler.
You know it's coming. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Senator Michiki and Ms. Stansfield. As you probably know, I've co-sponsored the House companion bill to this, and I support it. I want to ask some questions to develop some of the details about this. First off, could we just, for the purposes of our discussion, agree on some common terminology? The people who are the subject of a supported decision-making agreement, what's the best term to use to describe them? Just in our discussion, are they the principal? Are they the person, the individual, the client? What's the right term to use?
I believe the... Let's use client for this morning's discussion.
Okay.
And follow up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so for the client, these agreements, what kind of legal status do they have? Where are they recorded? What kind of document is it? Is it a formal form? Is it an informal agreement? Help us understand more what the actual legal document or agreement consists of.
Well, we're actually asking for the Representative Sadler through the chair. All we're actually asking is that there's not a formal system. I mean, it doesn't give them a right or supersede any other section. It authorizes the department to apply for a waiver to provide medical assistance payments for self-directed personal assistance, or does not authorize. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But we're asking that they're treated with the same respect as any other client in any other treatment regime, if you will. They've often been sort of handed a treatment package, which may or may not fit their particular lifestyle or direction in life. And I can give you an example. One is Maggie Winston. I don't know if you met her. She was on the Senate floor when we passed this bill. She's an amazing young woman. She's raising twins. She has a job, and she's amazingly productive. She's an advocate all over the state for persons with physical and mental disabilities. Yet she received some news of different services that she was going to be receiving, and frankly, she's one of the most productive individuals I've ever met, certainly. If you met with her and did not see the chair and the fact that she has no use of anything below her mid-chest, you would know that you would not know that she had a physical handicap. So it doesn't require a formal agreement. It just requests that the department allow self-direction and autonomy when they're deciding on services that they will receive. Mm-hmm. Most often at a lower cost than what the state had presented in prior to this bill moving forward.
And we do have Ms. Winston on the line to
excellent
to testify. Representative Sadler.
Well, thank you. One quick follow-up. Help the members of the committee through the chair, Senator Michiki, understand the number of people in Alaska with disabilities. I know you said that there are those who were all at risk or one accident away, but currently what's the number of people in Alaska who might benefit from this legislation?
Senator Michiki.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that number for you, but it sounds like the co-sponsor of the bill on the other side may be able to help me with that answer.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sadler.
No, sure, I'll have to defer as well.
I'm sure it's one that we can find. Representative Drummond.
While Representative Sadler is preparing for his next question. I do appreciate the definitions, the common definitions, and in leafing through some of the letters here, I see DD, which I figured out means developmentally disabled. I also see IDD without a definition for what the I is. And as we seem to spend a lot of time massaging the English of our bills in this committee, I just wonder about the word and between physical and mental in the title. Is this assuming that every one of the clients has both physical and mental disabilities, or should it be physical and or mental disabilities? Because not everybody, I know that not everybody exhibits both both sides of the spectrum.
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Representative Drummond, through the chair. This bill affects persons with physical disabilities and persons with mental disabilities. It's not one and the same. It affects both of them.
And the
Representative Drummond.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And IDD.
Individuals with developmental disabilities.
Okay. Thank you. That's it for now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And your representative.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
Representative Drummond, the other change that I like is we used to call them disabled Alaskans. And if you notice now, we call them Alaskans with disabilities. The person comes first. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important differentiation. We are all people. Some of us have disabilities, but by outlining their existence with the word disability or disabled, we feel reduces their value. They have the same value as each and every one of us that don't have disabilities. So I think it's an important change.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Representative Drummond, any further follow-up?
Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions from members of the committee for the bill's sponsor at this time? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, to the previous question, I don't have that number at the tip of my toes or tip of my tongue, but I can get that, certainly. But I will ask a question through the chair, Senator Michiki. This legislation seems to set an orientation or a new paradigm which intends that services for those with disabilities are something that should be done in cooperation with the people instead of done to them and for them, and that's a good thing. How might this practically play itself out in the way the state, probably Department of Health and Social Services, deals with or serves people with disabilities in Alaska?
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Sadler. I'm not sure who you have online this morning, but that will be... Perhaps
we've got a pretty broad section of
yes,
folks.
Perhaps Michelle or Lizette might be better versed on that subject.
Okay.
Hate to get out of my lane there.
Certainly. Seeing no further questions from the bill's sponsor for the bill's sponsor at this time. Thank you again, Senator Michiki, Ms. Stansbury. We'll now begin with invited testimony. For invited testifiers, we have Lizette Steer, Jamail Johnson, Michael Bailey, Michelle Giroux, Maggie Winston, Rick Nelson, and Corey Gilmore, and we will take them in that order. Ms. Steer, are you there?
Good morning. Good morning, committee and co-chair, co-chair Parrish. I so appreciate this opportunity to speak to Senator Michiki's bill, SB 174. And I represent AADD, which is the voice of the providers offering the services that you have been talking about to people who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities. And our professional association, think of it as a trade association, currently has 49 dues-paying members. So we are a fairly large group of both direct providers of services and care coordinators who, of course, also do direct services. The association has been a very active and strong supporter of the development of the shared vision that this bill represents. The vision brings a renewed energy and excitement to the work of the provider community because it reminds each one of us why it is that we dedicated our professional life to this field and where we want the focus of the services to be, which is on the individual receiving the services. And so this bill, the shared vision, provides for a flexible service array and services that are directed and driven by the person receiving the services rather than a bureaucracy. We're so appreciative that Senator Merchiki sponsored SB 74 and that Representative Sadler, you're co-sponsoring it, because this will provide a consistent and strong platform for individuals to lead their own services. It enriches their lives and the fabric of the community in which they participate. Services matching the shared vision will provide for a more independent life and greater personal confidence on the part of individuals. It will also help stretch limited funds further with greater participation in the community involving unpaid natural supports, which was mentioned earlier. Having this shared vision in statute will assure that the underlying philosophy of dignity, respect, and choice that I have heard spoken so articulately in this committee meeting to this time doesn't change, that underlying philosophy doesn't change with shifts in funding or political focus. Thank you again for your time and attention, and I just wanted to add one other thing. I do have numbers in front of me of the number of people served on waivers that would be directly impacted by this shared vision, and of course, the shared vision would have an impact beyond that, but there are 1,900 people, there's 222 children with complex conditions that are served, 2,085 that receive the intellectual with developmental disabilities waiver, and another 88 that fit into the category that you were talking about that are adults with physical disabilities that may or may not have an intellectual disability to go along with the physical disability. So I hope that is helpful, and thank you very much for your time and attention to this.
Thank you, Ms. Steer. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All righty. I thought I heard a hanging up. Would you please put your name and affiliation on the record?
Yes, my name is Lizette Steer, and I represent AADD, which is the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities.
Thank you, Ms. Steer, and thank you for your testimony. I see two questions from members of the committee. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Ms. Steer. Thank you for your testimony. Towards the end of your testimony, you referred to unpaid something support. I think you said natural, but I'm not sure, and it's a phrase I haven't heard before.
Oh, I love the opportunity to speak to this. It is unpaid natural supports, and natural supports are someone who would be a friend to an individual with intellectual and developmental disabilities who might drive them to church because they go to the same church. So natural supports are those natural friends that we have in the community that we're wanting to build more strongly into the life of individuals with developmental disabilities.
Okay, thank you. And also,
in
terms of the number of people served on waivers, first you listed 222 children with complex disabilities? Complex medical conditions. And then 2,085 with?
intellectual and developmental disabilities. That was the IDD that
That's
you
what
mentioned
IDD
in the beginning.
Thank you. And then the 88 with simply physical disabilities, not necessarily including an intellectual component.
Not excluding a intellectual disability, but not requiring it. Correct.
Okay. Oh, all right, very good. Thank you very much. All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair. And I want to make sure, I believe I heard Ms. Steer speak of 2,085 people who get the IDD waiver, and there are certainly more people on the wait list for the waiver, so I want to make sure we don't consider that the entire universe of people.
Thank you so much for clarifying that. Sadler, that is such an important distinction to make. There are currently 700 people on a wait list. So this is not the only number that would be impacted by this shared vision, as those people are long-term included in the service system. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Speer. Representative Drummond.
I apologize. What do you mean by a waiver? This is a new phrase to me.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to share this. A waiver is a Medicaid service that is expanded beyond the medical, limited to hospital and doctor appointments. A waiver is services that allow for support within the community through Medicaid reimbursement. So those services could include support for the family, respite. It could include rehabilitation, which allows individuals to get out into the community. It could include residential services, living in a group home, or living in supported living. So there are a number of services offered that allow the individual to then live within the community rather than in an institution.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Steer at this time? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to give you the opportunity, from the provider's perspective, again, put a fine point on it for us. How will this help stretch state dollars further by having this orientation?
This orientation, as it allows individuals greater strength in speaking to what they would like their services to be, individuals would rather be included in the community, have natural supports, have friends that do things with them. So I believe long term, as people are given greater and greater ability to direct their own services, person-directed services, the shared vision, will increase and enhance those natural supports that include them in the community, that will reduce the need for cost or paid supports.
Right. Okay. And a follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Sadler?
To the question of waivers, just by a way of illumination, people with disabilities are entitled often to a full, very high level of care at very high cost, and because the state of Alaska participates in the Medicaid program, we have agreed to provide those services. The waivers, the individual with disabilities waivers, basically allow people that deserve a high level of expensive care the option to exist in their community and receive community and home-based support, which allows them to stay out of institutions and thereby saves the state money. It does cost the state money to provide those home-based services, but far less expense to the state than if they were to avail themselves of the full level of services to which they're entitled. Waivers are a good deal. Waivers are savers for Alaska.
Beautifully said.
Seeing no further questions for the members from the members of the committee at this time, thank you again, Ms. Steer, for your testimony. We'll next go to Jamail Johnson. If you would please introduce yourself by placing your name and affiliation on the record, and you may begin with your testimony.
Thank you, and good morning. My name is Jamail Johnson. I'm a program officer with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Thank you for this opportunity to provide comment on the SB 174 programs for persons with disabilities. So as you may know, the trust exists to advocate on behalf of trust beneficiaries and to prioritize policies, practices, and funding towards strategies to to help improve the lives of beneficiaries. Beneficiary populations include Alaskans with mental illness, addiction, Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, traumatic brain injury, and as we're discussing today, individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The Trust strongly advocates for crucial services to our state's most vulnerable populations through community-based services. We know that these community-based services, as Lizette was mentioning, especially when they're person-centered and directed, effectively reduce the need for higher levels of more costly institutional care, as mentioned by Representative Sadler. The goal of the Trust is to serve as a catalyst for change and improvement in our state's continuum of care. Through partnership and funding, the Trust has and continues to support the work of the Developmental Disabilities Collaborative, who actually designed the DD vision on which this bill is based. We recognize SB 174 as a visionary framework to support people with disabilities in a way that increases the opportunity and quality of life for the individuals, their families, and their communities. SB 174 does this by elevating the individual experiencing a disability to more actively participate in and determine their own community-based care, thus more fully directing their own lives and wellness. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to provide comment on this and thank the sponsor for supporting and the committee for hearing this unifying systems vision to more effectively and efficiently support Alaskans who experience disabilities now and into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Ms. Johnson? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Johnson, you might, as a program officer with the Mental Health Trust, might be in a better position to give us some statewide numbers on the number of people with disabilities, either physical or mental or both. Do you have any numbers you might share with us to give us an idea of the scope of the issue we're dealing with?
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you for the question, Representative Sadler, through the chair. I can get those numbers for the committee. But I don't have them at my fingertips, and I apologize.
Okay. Are there any further questions for Ms. Johnson at this time? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony and for your work. We'll go next to Michael Bailey. Mr. Bailey, are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
Please place your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Michael Bailey. I work as the CFO for Hope Community Resources, which is a provider of the services that we've been talking about. Many of the systems of service delivery often are siloed and specialized, and each have their own set of regulations. And what this unified vision does is engages a collaborative system of paid and unpaid supports, as you talked about, to enhance the abilities of Alaskans, not just to address their disabilities. So supports are often compartmentalized in the current models, but this bill promotes the flexibility and greater inclusion, which then results in some better stewardship of state funds and greater opportunities for individuals who experience disabilities. A recent example I've been using is my own daughter participated in the Battle of the Books at middle school level. On her team was a young lady who experienced a disability. There's no paid supports there. Her friends just came around her and supported her. I'm very proud to say that they took the state title recently. What that does is it increases the awareness of the contributions and independence which can inspire others, as this young lady did in participating on that team. And the approach in SB 174 moves away from some of the traditional medical models towards integrated, meaningful lives. At the same time, it upholds person-centered directives from the federal government that are necessary to access and maintain Medicaid funds. This bill benefits everyone, regardless of the level of financial support available, and that means it's not an open checkbook to all these people in here who are going to be part of this vision, but it promotes partnerships and new models of support guided by value-driven philosophy. A lot of the time, as you can imagine, when there's a regulation package that has to go through to be revised and updated, it takes a long time. This allows some flexibility to respond more immediately. So we ask village to raise a child. And I'm going to submit to you it takes a community to help Alaskans with disabilities live meaningful lives. And thanks for being part of that community and look forward to your support.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Bailey? Seeing none, thank you again. We'll move on to the next testifier, Michelle Giroux. Ms. Giroux, are you there?
I am here.
If you'd please introduce yourself by putting your name and affiliation on the record, and then you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Giroux, and I am a guardian of two adults that experience disabilities, and I'm also a board member of the Key Coalition of Alaska. I want to thank all of you today for hearing our testimony, and I can only ditto all the comments that have been met so far regarding SB 174. As a guardian for two individuals, one of whom does receive a Medicaid waiver and one of whom is on the wait list, I just so wholeheartedly support putting into statute a vision, which a vision is a desired state of how our state implements our ability to support people. Regardless of the fact someone may have a disability or a mental illness, dementia, they're members of our local communities, they're residents of our state, and this particular bill sets a value-driven structure for how we treat people and we design service. I think if any one of you have ever had the chance to sit down and listen to someone who has a disability and how challenging it can be to be in a service system, highly regulated, lots of rules, and if you have a disability and a mental illness and you have to access two different tracks of service, it can be very complicated and exhausting. And I think from speaking from guardians' points of view and the individual's friends that I have, to have a service delivery system that is based on a vision of flexibility and the voice of those that say, I think if I could just have a little of this, that would give me some support. I think if I could have a little of that, that would give me some support. In the end, we have seen that community services cost far less than institutional care. And I think as our state is challenged to come up with unique ways to support people in cost-effective ways, this vision sets a structure for decision-making that as we look at should we do this or should we do that, is it flexible, is it driven by the individual, does it collaborate with community, and then those questions are brought to decision-making processes where at the individual level, at a regulatory development level, at state department levels as they collaborate with each other, how does our decision impact the provider of the service, how does the decision impact the receiver of the service, and how we collectively together can move forward. The Key Coalition did have this as our first platform to support. We're so grateful for the supporter, Senator Michicki, and all those that co-sponsored. Very appreciate the committee hearing this morning and just urge you to support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Giroux. I see a question from Representative Sadler. Rep. Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Giroux, help us out. We are we're hearing a lot of aspirational language and some theoreticals and some generalities is kind of the tone of the discussion here. Help me and help the members of the committee understand, help us translate some of the aspirational language into some hard practical applications of how this vision placed in state statute might help improve the life of Alaskans with disabilities. And the more specific you can be, the better for us to kind of put some hard facts to the aspirations.
Yes, thank you, Representative Sadler. I think that it's hard to answer that question very specifically because we're all just starting to think about how could it work. But I think for instance, the woman that I support that's on the wait list, as of June, she's had some grant services that will end as of June 30th due to, you know, the fiscal dynamic and cuts that have been made to help stabilize other services. But a flexible service could say, what if she would be able to have, and I think maybe when the Key Coalition was down, some of you heard the language of a companion service. She doesn't necessarily need to have habilitative service, but needs to have companionship to go into the community. So if the department was able to create a companionship service that was gave her a few hours a week to be able to access community safely, that would be something that could tangibly shift the way services are delivered, that perhaps there's a way to deliver services outside of the Medicaid waiver specifically. Perhaps there's a way to add a service within the Medicaid waiver. We have a number of people that as they age with disabilities start to have maybe some mental health or dementia issues, and how do they access those services easily within the environments that they live in? Because some of the regulatory restrictions restrict how services are delivered. So the idea of this is to set the vision that would allow departments to come together to say, how can we collaborate to share the funding sources that we have access to particularly benefit this individual? And I don't know if that answers it specifically, but I think the idea for us is to work together with all the departments that impact those with disabilities to figure out how we can reduce the complexity sometimes of services and ease the path for people who are asking for help.
Good, Chair.
Thank you. I'll follow up, Representative.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Ms. Giroux, that does help. I understand it's difficult to do exactly because it hasn't happened yet, but that does help me bring a little bit more facts to the situation. There's also some discussion about how the state might save money and people might maintain a higher level of services if this vision were to be placed in statute. Can you help me understand and help the committee members understand, is there a change in under the IDD waivers that would reduce the number of hours of day rehab that people receive under the waiver, and how this might help buttress that or compensate for those losses?
Ms. Giroux.
Well, I think that the talk has been, yes, dayhab has been a service that has been somewhat individualized. There are a number of people that have had individual hours that have now been reduced to 12, where they may have had more. But I think that all of us as guardians partnering with providers are looking for, okay, how can we create maybe a group service that would be cheaper for somebody to access community, so I could go bowling, or I could take an art class, or I could take a dance class with a group, and perhaps those services could be in a grouped category rather than an individual day hub service, and have a funding source for a grouped activity. So you have a companion, or you have a teacher that may and then that's more natural, I think, for people, you know, because many of us, we go bowling with friends, and we go bowling with, we go to church with a group, or we access a dance class with a group. But people with disabilities need assistance to be safe. They need assistance potentially with transportation. They need assistance with potentially communicating their needs. And I think creating a path where we can structure activities at a cheaper rate for group services that would maybe change the individual day hub that's needed into maybe a group setting. That's just one example.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Giroux. Are there any further questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony. I'll take this opportunity to invite anyone who's testifying remotely. If you have a transcript, if you've got a written copy of your testimony, we would appreciate having it sent in as an email, just for the sake of our records. And you can send that email to house.community.and.regional.affairs@akleg.gov. Next, we'll be going to Maggie Winston. Ms. Winston, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
If you'd please introduce yourself, place your name and any affiliation on the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Maggie Winston. I live in Kenai, Alaska, and I'm the chairperson for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. This morning, Senator Mashiki started with a quote from Shelley, Claire's mom, that individuals are just one incident or one big calamity away from needing services. And I represent that specific individual. I was 21 years old, and I was struck with a virus that gave me a spinal cord injury, taking away the use of all functional use of my arms and legs. And so I was a very young person that was immediately thrown into an entirely new life, and that I needed a way to navigate through service provision and being able to find services for myself that would enable me to still live in my home and community as a young person and as a mother. So if I could just offer like a quick metaphor, because I know that services are complicated and it's not anything that can be reduced to something so easy, but essentially, as a person who receives services, we've heard the term like a package of services this morning. So I receive a package of services, and sometimes those services come in a size that is not appropriate for the individual that receives them. So let's say that I'm shopping for services and all that is offered to me is like a small, medium, or a large, right? Because I need something that fits me. Well, what if I wear a size like 25X? I need something that is way outside what the services are, what services are available to me. So essentially, this bill will provide the flexibility to allow individuals to receive services that are more fitting to them. I'm one of those individuals. So I'm asking for your support in putting into statute a language that allows more flexibility, more individualized services, and more autonomy and independence for individuals that are living in their home and communities like myself. And thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Winston. Are there any questions from members of the committee for Ms. Winston? Representative Sadler.
I guess I will. Through the chair, Ms. Winston, I'm going to ask the same question I asked of the previous witness here. Can you give us any, I know you gave us the model of using double XL size services. Can you bring that down to a little more fact-based, any more specific examples of services and how they might be offered differently?
Sure, and thank you for the opportunity. There are several types of services that individuals can receive. Some of those are like PCA, supported employment, supported living. There's group home services. And all of these services provide different regulations, different reimbursement rates, different agencies that provide certain services and not other services. So when an individual needs to receive a broad scope of services, like several of those kinds of services, it can be very complicated. It can be very complicated not only as far as an agency to provide those services, but as far as receiving individuals like PCAs or so those would be people that come into your home and provide services. There's different, like I said, different reimbursement rates that the state will pay at those services. So it kind of makes things much more complicated. And so if you need to receive several different kinds of services, then you not only have to navigate through different agencies and different individuals, but let me just back up a little bit. So can you ask your question again once more, Representative Sadler?
Representative
Sadler.
Thank you. Ms. Winston, I was asking, and you're doing a good job so far, frankly, is to describe specifically how this vision might be practically implemented. You know, what kind of particular programs or particular situations might the change this envisions to our system do better for people with disabilities? And the more specific, the better. You're doing a good job with that. And for the record, PCA is personal care assistant.
Ms. Winston.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so essentially that it will just take a language and make it easier for individuals to receive services, in that it will make those person-directed. That's what I was trying to get at. And it will make it easier for the individual that receives the services to direct how they would like to receive them and in which way.
And last question, Ms. Winston, does the Governor's Council have are you speaking for yourself or speaking as the chair of the Governor's Council? Is this the Governor's Council's position expressing support for this bill?
Ms. Winston.
Absolutely, yes. I'm expressing support from the Governor's Council and from myself, yes.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Winston, for your testimony and for your work. Next, we have Rick Nelson. Mr. Nelson, are you there?
Yes, I am, and this is his interpreter, Charles Hudson, for the record. His name is Rick Nelson. He will speak, and then I will interpret to make things easier understandable.
Thank you. If you'd please make sure that you've got both of your names and affiliations on the record. And you may proceed.
My name is Rick Nelson, and I work for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education as an employment program coordinator, and I am his PCA, Charles Hudson, and I work for Rick.
Thank you. You may proceed with your testimony.
So I would
like to mention a couple of things.
So March
is Disability Awareness Month. And we have about 11,500 people with disabilities in Alaska right now.
So
for my own story, I've received a waiver for the past 12 years. And if I didn't have a waiver, I don't think that I would be where I am right now. I have 3 degrees. And the latest of those degrees is a Master in Public Administration. And after my Master in Public Administration,
I got hired to work for the council.
After I received that degree, I was hired to work for the council. And I make decisions on the services that I receive. And I think the people that are receiving services should have the same opportunity. Because we're all human beings. And we should have the same opportunities as anybody else. I think that we should have the final decision.
Ha! right time.
To have the care that we need at the right time.
At the right place.
And at the right place.
So I need you to prepare this meal.
I urge you to pass this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson, for your testimony, and particularly for giving us the 11,500 figure, which we've been hoping for the...
well, and said you're welcome.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for Mr. Nelson at this time? Seeing none, thank you again, sir, for your testimony. We'll next go to Corey Gilmore. Mr. Gilmore, are you there? It seems that Mr. Gilmore is not available at this time. We'll take a brief at ease so I can check in with the bill sponsor. I should note that on the line we do have Duane Mays, the director for the Division of Senior and Disability Services, who is, I'm sorry, Duane probably, who is available for any questions. That ends invited testimony. I'm now opening public testimony. I don't see anyone online. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, I will now be closing public testimony. Are there any questions for Director Mays? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, absolutely. Through the chair, good morning, Duane. From your perspective, you're one of the people who's probably going to have the best system-wide perspective. If you think there'd be any information about the number of Alaskans with disabilities of various kinds, I would invite you to put that on the record now for the edification of the committee and the public.
Director Mays.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Duane Mays, and I'm the director for the Division of Senior and Disability Services. So Mr. Nelson is correct. I was hoping that you would ask me that question. So I always use the number just under 12,000 in terms of people with disabilities. And just to add to that, we have roughly 120,000 to 125,000 people that are considered seniors over the age of 60. So those are the two things that are very relevant to our world. And
good deal. So thank you.
I put that on the record.
Thank you. Are there?
I'll follow up. Thank you very much. Through the chair, Mr. Mays. So help us understand from your perspective how this placing this vision in state statute would help your division achieve its goals for the people of Alaska who experience disabilities.
Sure, you bet. Let me just start first with a story. Back in high school, my parents are both deaf and they communicate through American Sign Language, and they struggled over the years to understand English. American Sign Language has a syntax and a grammar that's a bit different from English. So quite often when I was growing up, they would turn to me, and so I had to be an adult at a young age and ask for advice on whatever they received, whether it was a letter or it was a bill or something would happen, and they just couldn't quite understand that. And then I would often help them by articulating what it really meant so that they can make a sound decision. I put them in the driver's seat. So in high school, I worked with a lot of students with the developmental disabilities, and we created a buddy system, building natural supports within the high school world, supporting those students with developmental disabilities as they navigated the school. And so I think part of that had to do with just how I was raised in this family. Now we fast forward and evolve to today. For me, this is a very defining bill. It absolutely makes sense because what we will do in working as a partner with the council and the trust is to train care coordinators, I think that's the first step, to understand the importance of the individual being in the driver's seat, very person-centered, but train the care coordinators to really understand that as they work with these providers or work with these recipients, and as Senator Michicki said, clients. So that's the goal. And then also to work on building natural supports. So we heard from Lizette Steer about an individual going to the movie or to the library or whatever and having someone join them, a friend. That's a natural support that's not going to cost the state money. I believe that over time we're going to see realized efficiencies by implementing this model, which unfortunately in my mind we should have done a long time ago. So I'm excited about this opportunity. For me, it's a very defining bill. As a director, I'm glad I'm part of this.
Thank you, Director Mays.
Follow up.
Thank
you, for the Chair. Dwayne, help me understand, help the committee members understand, what will be the relationship between this bill, Senate Bill 174, and a somewhat similar bill, HB 336, which is making its way through the House of Representatives on supported decision-making agreements? How would these interact, complement, or conflict with each other?
Well, both, again, for the record, Dwayne Mays with SES, Senior Disability Services, both really complement that person-centered model. So supported decision-making, that would describe how I helped my parents back in the day when in high school, helping them to make really sound decisions, make the right kind of decisions. That's very person-centered. And then, of course, this bill in particular, 174, Senate Bill 174, it puts the individual back in the driver's seat, helping them to kind of craft their plan, look into some of those natural supports that can be built into the plan. So it really does. It's a marriage between these two bills, I think, is important.
Thank you. And follow up.
And
equipment applies this. But while I notice that this bill has a zero fiscal note, can you give us your perspective on the financial implications for the state long term if we were to adopt this legislation?
Director Mays.
So I would say that you have our external resources, as in the care coordinators, who will work with the individual to develop the plan. If anything, in terms of resources from the state perspective, I see efficiencies in the supports being kind of extended to the care coordinator and to the recipient. I see efficiencies in that way. So I don't see us bringing additional resources to make that happen. So I don't see that being a burden on the state.
Okay.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Mays, for being available to answer questions today. As a former school board member and currently chair of the House Education Committee, there are many services that are provided in the K-12 system and preschool for children with special needs. Is there an intersection in the numbers of people that are served in the state with the K-12 system and adults beyond the K-12 system? And do you expect any impact on the K-12 system with the shared vision of this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I don't see that. I don't see that being an issue going forward in terms of K-12.
Okay, and does that number of just under 12,000 individuals with developmental disabilities include students in the K-12 system or not?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, there is a small percent of the we have as Lizette Steer had mentioned, 2,080 individuals that are currently receiving services through the IDD waiver, individuals with developmental disabilities, and there is a small percent, I don't have that in front of me, individuals that are on that waiver that are in the educational system.
Okay. As well as children with complex medical conditions.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Are there any further questions for Director Mays at this time? Seeing none, thank you, Director Mays. We're actually going to go back to invited testimony for a moment because I see that Corey Gilmore has joined us online.
Hi. Thank you for having me, and it's my honor to testify before you. I receive services through the waiver that the director just mentioned, and I'm here to testify for this bill because right now we're really needing everything is about us, but not directed by us. So when you have a disability, you have a plan of care. That plan of care says everything that you will agree to do for the year. And at the end of the meeting, after they talked about you for an hour to an hour and a half, they would take 5 minutes and ask you what you would like to do for the year. And really, we need to turn that on its head because we have people who agree to things that, you know, they never were a part of because they feel intimidated or they don't feel empowered to say what they want. And we need to allow that, even if it's some people who need help with that, and that's fine, that's okay. But as much as possible, those of us who have to live with this kind of care need to be directing it.
And, Corey, if you'd please place your name and any affiliation on the record.
Sure. My name is Corey Gilmore. I work in the community. I have the honor of serving on the Governor's Council for Disabilities and Special Education, although I would point out, as always, that today I'm speaking for myself.
Thank you, Corey. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gilmore, I noticed from your bio that you are working towards a career as a youth pastor, and you teach a youth group at church. Does this bill align with any of the spiritual principles that you try and teach the people in your classes?
Sure. One of the things I always say is that life requires honest participation. And one of the things I always teach is, yes, it's important that we believe in God, but more importantly, something that is missed is that God believes in each one of us and expects us to do our best and expects us to give to other people and to help other people. And, you know, part of this bill is about maybe dreaming bigger. I mean, a typical goal for somebody with a developmental disability might be, you know, Corey will brush his teeth every day. Now, I don't know, I'm not saying dental hygiene is not important, but I don't know about you, but I have bigger goals in life than just brushing my teeth. I really want to get to school, and I really want to make a difference for the people around me. And so that's what this is about, is learning to write a plan of care that is about what I want and what what I need, because I feel called to make a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you again for your testimony and for your continued advocacy and involvement. It's always good to hear from you. Are there any further questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Gilmore? Seeing none, are there any further questions from the members of the committee for Director Mays, from the Division for Senior Disability Services? Seeing none, I'd like to thank all of the testifiers again and Director Mays for being available today and for sharing their input. We will be holding over Senate Bill 174. That was the final item on the agenda. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 15th at 8 a.m. Any amendments to Senate Bill 174 will be due by Wednesday, March 14th at 4 p.m. and can be delivered to my staff, Patrick Courtnish. This meeting is adjourned.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sattler.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, so we've had our first hearing on the bill today, and amendments are due tomorrow at 4 p.m. Is that correct?
That's correct. This meeting is adjourned at 9:09 a.m.